I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Does Monday at the office feel like a storm? Not with Microsoft Copilot. That feeling when Copilot gets everyone up to speed instantly? It's sunny again. When Copilot simplifies complex data so your teams can act, that sun's shining on a beach. And when Copilot uncovers hidden insights, you're on that beach with your people and you find buried treasure. That's Microsoft Copilot. Learn more at Microsoft.com/AI for all.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Getting engaged is a moment worth cherishing. A one-of-a-kind ring that you design at Blue Nile can help your love sparkle. Just choose your diamond and setting. When you've found the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Finding the right engagement ring can be nerve-wracking. At Blue Nile, you'll have the expert guidance needed and a diamond guarantee that ensures you're getting the highest quality at the best price. Cherish all of life's moments and save up to 30% at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Good evening and welcome to the Full Press Raiders podcast. My host, Terrence Biggs. Normally we have a long intro, but we're just going to get into what transpired between the Raiders and Chiefs and preview the Falcons game. But let me introduce my guest. He is possibly one of the most insightful folks that break down film on social media, our guy Ryan Holmes. Good evening, Ryan. How are you tonight?
Good. Good evening to yourself as well.
Whew. Ryan, this game was awful, brutal, but it's strange. I look at it as a game of so many different parts, but I'm going to start with John Gruden and his coaching. Do you think that at points in this game that John Gruden played not so much not to win, but he didn't coach as aggressively as he should have?
I think there's certain instances, obviously, in the first half when he kicked the field goal. It was following a 15-yard penalty that he probably shouldn't have gotten, considering it would have been fourth and goal from about the 1.5-yard line, and he kind of went berserk over the non-call and the Bryan Edwards fade. I thought that penalty aside, they probably should have gone for it there. But after the penalty, he didn't really have a choice. Late in the fourth quarter, there was an opportunity on a fourth and four. I mean, you're playing the Chiefs. Your defense hasn't really stopped them all game. The only three stops they really got, if you think about it, a couple of penalty stall, two drives, and interception at the goal line. So they never really stopped them or forced them to punt other than a couple of penalties. So it would have been risky, you know, fourth and four at your own 38-yard line in the fourth quarter, but you're playing Patrick Mahomes, and, you know, to give him the ball back, obviously, with under 2 minutes, they really didn't have a choice there. They had to score. They were down by four, but I thought he coached well on offense, but, you know, it's those not being aggressive enough and kind of relying on the defense in certain situations has let him down most of the year outside of the Chargers game, and that was close and probably could have gone either way right there at the end.
I agree. I think that with Gruden, he somehow has these moments of just passivity where, like you said, if they didn't catch that unsportsmanlike or that the 15-yarder, they should have gone for it. But on short yards in the red zone this entire year, he has shown that he will kick the field goal and take the points. I'm like, last night could have been the chance to came back to bite him if they go for it. The Chiefs weren't stopping anyone either. And if they would have scored, this game would have been a lot different. But I kind of want to break down the offensive defense. I want to first break down Derek Carr. It's weird. This is the most passing yards he's had since the game against Tampa. And yet, this is the Carr between the last couple of weeks of just having the Raiders running game bash opposing defenses. I knew that he could, but it's interesting to watch him throw. Like, he throws such a good ball. And if you're him and you're watching a couple of these drops, like, they were accredited with four, Aguilar and Engel. Now, Engel, because of his rib injuries, I can't really fault him, but Aguilar, like, at this point, is it concentration? Is it just timing? He drops ones that land in his hands.
Yeah, and we're starting to see a little bit of the Philly Aguilar that showed up. He's still making plays down the field. He's still hitting that home run ball every once in a while, but you're starting to see it. It's a drop here, a drop there. Now it's been multiple drops back-to-back weeks, and it could be just the high volume of targets he's getting. He's bound to do it sooner or later. The one thing I've noticed, and it happened on both the drops, is for some reason, he likes to go to the ground a lot and make kind of these sliding catches when he doesn't need to. And that, I don't know if he's losing a little bit of concentration when he does that, but you saw him fight the ball in the end zone last week, and this week it's two plays going to the ground, but they're still targeting him heavily, and he took a lot of the deep routes away from Ruggs this week. And there was, if you looked at the snap count, Aguilar played almost, I think it was most of the snaps. I don't know the number from my head, but it was all but maybe about 8 to 10. Ruggs played 32 out of, I think, 59, and Renfro played 20. So they're dialing up stuff for Aguilar now, and you're seeing the more opportunities he's getting, you're starting to see those lapses and those drops come in, and there were some costly ones this week. I really think they need to keep that more in the 4 to 5 range and spread that ball out. They have to get Renfro and Ruggs involved. I know the offense is going up and down the field and scoring 30 points a week, but they need to get those guys involved. You can't rely on Aguilar in the running game and an occasional ball to Waller, because I don't think that's going to work in the long run.
I agree. I don't think it's going to work in the playoffs. Plus, you have invested the 11th pick in the draft. You need to use him. Like, they had a running play. He had one target for 5 yards. We'll definitely get to that. But last night, to me, it seemed like the Raiders ventured away from what made them. I mean, yes, the offense was scoring, but 89 yards on the ground is hard. And when they came out, that first drive, you see Josh Jacobs just pounding it and just in there and making a play. But as the game wore on, he had 17 carries. He lacked that burst. And I'm kind of wondering, do you think that the early overuse in the first part of the season started to catch up?
I think it was just a matter of fact, they didn't have the ball. I mean, Kansas City got 36 first downs in the game, and they had a 9-minute drive there to start the third quarter. And kind of what happened was they took Jacobs out there on the third drive, put Booker in. The Raiders had a long drive to go down the field, kick the field goal. And then they didn't get the ball back again until the end of the third quarter. At that point, I think Jacobs had 9 carries. So he just didn't really get a chance to get involved. They used Booker on that whole drive, the third drive of the game. And I don't think anything's wrong with Jacobs. He had a run where he ran a guy over, kind of trucked him, which was good to see. But I just think the Raiders didn't have the ball enough, didn't have enough possessions to really incorporate him and slow the game down. Kansas City did to the Raiders what you thought the Raiders were going to do to Kansas City.
And that's, you know, it's definitely, it was a different sight. Now, with the offensive line, again, you know, Carr was clean. He was clean again. And we mentioned it last week, but news came out today that Richie Incognito would miss the rest of the season with an Achilles injury. They're on the hook for his contract or his salary next year. Denzel Good definitely needs a pay bump. Do you think that Incognito will come back at a reduced rate, or do you think that it's just time to kind of eat the dead cap money and kind of move to Good?
I think he's going to retire. I mean, he's 38, 39 years old with an Achilles injury that he has to rehab. He's a bigger guy. you know, 320 pounds. It's not something. He's got to be able to move. I think it's time for him to call it a career. He's had a good career. He's overcome a lot of adversity in his career, some self-inflicted, some not. But for the Raiders, you know, thank him for what he did while he was here for the last year and a half, but it's time to move forward with good, I think, full-time at left guard.
And what the good story is, I mean, it's encouraging because we remember what happened, you know, the coach in Indianapolis who apparently was not the sharpest tool in the shed and not the best person. Good, you know, he pretty much tried to submarine Good's reputation, and Good has shown that he's a quality player. And speaking of, with Colton Miller back, did you see Colton Miller when he was at UCLA being this guy, or did you think that it would take 5 years for him to kind of become serviceable?
He was drafted basically on his athletic profile. He had a lot of traits you look for. He moved really well. He bent at the knees. He wasn't a waistbender. He was 6'8". He needed functional strength, and he had some problems technically with his feet work. He kind of had a false step coming out of college that was allowing him to get beat around the corner, and you actually saw that show up a lot his rookie year after he injured his knee, and he'd have those moments where he'd take that false step out of his stance, and then he would lose the edge quickly. But I think as he's added strength to his frame, he now has functional playing strength where he can handle the bull rushes, and he's always been a good enough athlete to be able to handle the speed rushers. The run blocking has been okay this year. There's games where he has good moments. There's games where he doesn't. I thought he looked fine. I've watched the first half of the game. I haven't had a chance to get to the second half yet. But I thought he looked fine in his comeback this week. And he's definitely a player that I think the Raiders are going to have to invest in long term. It's really hard to find a left tackle. I know Pro Football Focus doesn't like him. They have him ranked really low. But I'd argue that with his athletic ability, he's probably playing as a top 10 left tackle in the league. He's definitely better than average. I don't know if he's ever going to be a Pro Bowler. But he's good enough to pay, you know, I think somewhere in the range of 5 years, $75 million. He's not getting Ronnie Stanley type of money, but he's definitely a guy we're going to have to invest in to keep that line up in front of Carr.
I agree. I think just a side note about Pro Football Focus, like, they do such good work, but I got to be honest, I watch film, I watch all 22. What they see and what the film says to me doesn't always line up. I could be wrong, but sometimes I don't understand. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it aligns properly for me. That's just probably my own whatever. But moving on to Darren Waller, had an interesting game last night. Darren Waller, for lack of a better term, he pretty much manhandled Tyrann Mathieu the entire game. Like, he pretty much threw around one of the best safeties in football. And to Carr's credit, he targeted him 7 times. There was no concentration drops. He caught all 7, and he embarrassed Mathieu to the point of, this was a player who was a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year last year, and he was humiliated on national television. When you see Waller have these games, there's been the thought of Waller, Kelsey, and George Kittle. There's really no fourth, and there's no really wrong answer considering that Waller is still trying to find his way as far as playing tight end. Can you make the correlation from any other football player you've seen to someone who switched positions and has made this big of a leap in such a short amount of time?
Yeah, off the top of my head, I can't. It's a guy that basically played wide receiver in college. He was on a practice squad. You know, Mayock and Gruden saw him warming up on the field before a game against Baltimore and signed him. And basically, for the last 4 or 5 games of a season, and the next year, he's catching 90 balls, and this year he's on pace to catch probably 100. And he's also, believe it or not, as good as he was receiving this week, he was actually really good as an inline blocker this week, too, and created a number of holes and held his own against defensive ends, which is something you haven't seen a lot of. You've seen him doing a lot of those sift blocks where he comes back across and gets the backside defensive end and kind of cuts them off. But he was used at the point of attack this week in the running game and held up really well. But no, off the top of my head, it's hard to think of a guy that's made a switch, and then basically after three or four games going into another season and being essentially a Pro Bowl level player that has a chance to only get better. There was some routes. If you remember, I think it was like a 3rd and 5 in the first half when the Raiders had to punt when they were up 17-14. Waller was open on a go route, but Carr just had some pressure in his face and had to bail out to his right and get rid of the ball. So he could have had another 50-yard touchdown right there. He had a couple of steps on the corner. So he was open all day. There's nothing really Kansas City did to stop him.
It's one of those things with Waller where this was a Gruden and Mayock find that is exception to watch a guy flourish as much, considering what his backstory was and considering what he's had to overcome, like you said, with Incognito as far as Waller. Some of this was self-inflicted, but he's managed to craft a stellar career for him so far. When we come back from break, we are contractually obligated to discuss defense in this game, or the lack thereof, and we need to get into it. I tried to avoid it, but there's so much to get into here. You are listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Ryan Holmes, Ryan. We got to take it point by point. Now, the defense. They were missing a couple players, but the defensive line once again just can't get home. They didn't really offer too much resistance to Patrick Mahomes. Now, you tweeted earlier about Malik Collins, and this is the first point I want to hit. You mentioned you had an interesting point that if anyone goes back and watches the film, it bears to be stunningly accurate. Can you share the point and kind of share what you see as far as what his shortcomings are?
Yeah, Malik Collins on the interior, he's not really holding up in the run game, and then even in pass blocking one-on-one, he's on the ground a lot, and it's something I've noticed every week. I haven't really thrown it out there on film, but literally right away, I saw three or four instances on the first couple of drives to Kansas City where he's just on the ground. Guys are knocking him over one-on-one, and he's not really doing much at all. He was a non-factor again, and it's something that, you know, a couple of weeks into the season I didn't really want to bring up, but now it's week after week after week. And that's the one Pro Football focus grade I will agree on. They had him ranked like 110th out of 120 defensive tackles. And he has not played well at all. And he's been a surprising disappointment. And I would think moving forward, the Raiders really need to consider not using him much at all. And I was surprised Maurice Hurst was inactive considering he played all week. If he was healthy and they decided not to play Maurice Hurst and keep Malik Collins active, I think that's a bad decision by the coaching staff. Obviously, I'm not with him in practice. I don't know what goes on in meeting rooms. But Maurice Hurst is their best pass rusher. They can win one-on-one battles. He can give you interior pressure. And he's not even suiting up for a game against Patrick Mahomes. So I wish one of the beat writers would have asked John Gruden about that, but they don't really ask very many questions in these press conferences, and hopefully someone brings it up this week. But I think John Gruden should be asked why Maurice Hurst was not suited up in that game and why Malik Collins continues to get extensive snaps.
If I had to speculate, which, like, you know, it's just pure conjecture at this point, my thought is maybe it's that connection with Rob Marinelli because they have that from their time in Dallas. But anyone who watches Maurice Hurst knows that he's a far better player than Malik Collins. And Malik Collins has done not even next to nothing. He's done nothing this entire season. And it's been a complete waste of a roster spot. And the defensive line where we know that Carl Nassib had a pretty big game last week against Denver, but I'm still surprised that a defensive end of his size will crash in that hard seemingly every time. Do you think this is direction from the sidelines, or do you think this is what he will go, like something about the Chiefs that makes him do this?
I believe it's direction, because you saw Crosby doing it too, and they do it over and over again. It's something they've done most of the season, is crash those. They'll line up basically, you know, straight up or outside shoulder of the tackle, and then they'll crash in into that gap between the right guard and the right tackle. I guess that'd be the B gap. But you see them a lot of times crashing in, and the Chiefs knew they were going to do that. And when the Raiders play cover three, the outside corner bails, and then now you have a soft edge. You have no force player, and they would just kept running that crack toss or those sweeps to the outside, and they were 10 yards downfield before there was a player near those running backs. And that's something that's happened to the Raiders all season. It happened in New England. But I think that's by design. It's something you always see them doing gap exchanges on the inside. You see Vickers was doing it. They had Arden Key in a defensive tackle doing it, crashing in to the A-gap. And I'd like to see them just let the defensive line eat, just attack the outside shoulder and try to get past them. But you just don't see that. And then it really showed up there at the end of the game when Nassau got completely washed down, and it just looked like a dog pile of Raiders defensive linemen, and while Mahomes is standing there and getting out to his right. My biggest gripe about it, you know, obviously I'm not an NFL defense coordinator, but Mahomes is really dangerous when he escapes to his right, and they kept crashing in from that defensive left end against the right tackle, and just allowed Mahomes to go to his right whenever he wanted. And there was no spy. You didn't see Arden Key crashing in. I personally would have liked to see John Abraham Abram in that spy role, use his speed to run after Mahomes and get him out of coverage, because he blew a lot of assignments this week. I know he didn't practice, but they had a lot of problems on the back end in coverage, and they were playing a lot of zone coverages with a lot of inexperienced players that didn't practice. And I just thought this was a week that Gunther kind of got away from what worked in the second half last week, and never really saw that defense come out this week. And you see the scoreboard, they put up 35 points pretty easily, and 36 first downs is kind of a big concern.
The 36 first downs kind of, it's definitely concerning, because they on two drives they had the ball 30 plays, something a little bit under 30 plays for two drives. One was a 16 play drive, I think one was a 12 play drive, and when you look at it, that's what tired defense is out. But to the Gunther point of the Chiefs had Mike Remmers at right tackle. Now I'm old enough to remember when Mike Remmers was being destroyed by Von Miller in the Super Bowl. He really hasn't improved since then. This is where the Raiders, even though they were possibly like missing a couple guys and playing an experienced guy, should have, like you said, attacked the outside, but they didn't. And the defensive line is with me, because when Max Crosby, when he's on, he's feeling it. But then he disappeared a lot last night. He kind of drifted. And it just didn't seem like they were factors, and him, that they weren't factors. And against Mahomes, you need to generate something upfield, and they really did not. And to the linebacker point, is this the best we've seen Nick Morrow play?
I think so. He had a good game last week. This week so far, you know, and looking at the film, he's been okay. He got kind of swallowed up in the run game pretty easily there. Kansas City ran the ball at will. But he's been really good in coverage, and he's been holding up in his zone responsibilities. He had a couple of plays where he covered running backs out in the flat. They didn't really match him up on Kelce. He's not a good matchup there size-wise, so he wasn't asked to do that. But I think they're putting him in situations he can handle. He's been in the system. This is his third or fourth year. He knows third year with Gunther. I think it might be a fourth year with the team, but he understands the defense and what his responsibilities are. He's not over-pursuing a lot in coverage. He's not missing as many tackles as other players on the team. But on your defensive line comment a second ago, I think Gruden and Mayock are starting to realize that they brought in Vic Beasley today for the practice squad. They claimed Tack McKinley off waivers. They're going to have to generate a pass rush somehow. And for Gunther to have the defensive ends crashing in so much, the problem was there was no adjustment, because they were playing a soft cover three with single high a lot of times, and those corners were bailing. They were just throwing 5-6 yards underneath, and there was no one within 5 or 6 yards to come tackle those players. The pass rush never really had a chance. to get home. There was no adjustments. There was no overload blitzes. You don't really want to blitz Mahomes a lot, but I think it's sad to say this, but I think losing LaMarcus Joyner of the day of the game completely changed the game plan because Nevin Lawson had to slide inside. He didn't really hold up on the run game. That he got demolished in the run game. He can't hold up the slot nickel or the slot corner, and the nickel is a run defender, as a force player. And then he had his trouble in coverage. And not having Joyner, you never saw Abram really come down in the box very often. They used him basically back in coverage, so you lost that guy in the middle of the field that could run around and create havoc and blitz and at least show a blitz and then back out. You just basically saw a lot of vanilla cover three, some cover four, a little bit of cover six. They never really went after Mahomes, and they just let Mahomes. And you knew Kansas City was going to adjust. They basically wanted to throw the deep ball, and the Raiders took that away in the first meeting. And they just came out and said, you know what, we're just going to take those checkdowns on those underneath routes and make you tackle us in space. The Raiders missed a ton of tackles. For the type of defense they ran in this game, they needed to make those tackles, and they just didn't. They continued to whiff, over-pursue, guys diving at players. And just, I have a lot of questions about the whole game plan. I didn't really understand what they were doing. They didn't take away Kelce. They didn't take away Hill. They didn't stop the run. They didn't pressure Mahomes. They just basically let Kansas City do whatever they wanted. And I had a hard time watching that last night on TV.
During that 16-play drive that the Chiefs had, Tyreek Hill caught five passes. And you would just, you to your point, you think they would adjust that you really can't have one guy catching five passes during one consecutive drive, one long drive. He touched the ball pretty much a third of the time, and it never really adjusted. Another thing that I never thought to say this, but last night with the Kansas City run game, I kind of missed Cleveland Farrell. I kind of missed him. Like, his ability to stop the run or to be able to set the edge, it was missed because when the Chiefs got to the corner, there was no one there for Vegas to do. There was no one home. There was no one there. And they never really did much as far as being able to cut the corner off. Even Bell had his first touchdown for the Chiefs. Now, we got to talk about Jonathan Abram.
I think it's time to do that, yeah.
So many people have, I'm in the camp of this, where I want, you know, to see and keep him, to keep improving. I want to see, you know, because he has the mental game, let me rephrase that. He has the aggressive part of the game down. He's aggressive. We know he's not timid. Bad angles, missed tackles, freelancing. Where would you like to start with him?
I like his aggressiveness. I like the mindset. I like the physicality he brings to the defense. I understand he's a second-year player, missed his whole rookie year, so he's basically played 11 games at this point. But he has to understand situational football, and he has to know what his responsibilities are. And like you said, he can't freelance. That last touchdown to Kelce was all on him. They were in a cover four. It was his responsibility to cover that area that Kelce ran to. He saw Mahomes get outside the pocket and start working the line of scrimmage, and he just completely had a coverage bust with 20 seconds left. You have to understand Kansas City had no timeout. Even if Mahomes runs that ball for 10 yards and you tackle him, they kick a field goal, you go to overtime. The minute he vacated the zone, you lost the game. And he had a 15-yard penalty on the sideline with a late hit. There was no reason for him to make that play and make that contact. The guy was already out of bounds. He had a bunch of missed tackles. You saw a play where he got into the backfield on a blitz and went for the fake. Mahomes just rolled around to his right, got away from him. So he flashes on film. You like the physicality. You like the speed. It's the mental processing. And then at some point, I hate to say this, but he's got to be a professional and understand what his job is and do his job. And you kind of heard Derek Carr talk about it after the game. Do your job. Jeff Heath talked about it last week. Do your job. And I don't know if those are subtle messages to Abram, but I kind of think they are.
I mean, they need to be, at this point, they need to be louder messages with Abram because it's just the angles. He takes such poor angles, and he's diving and missing. Although, to his credit, on the last drive, he had two tackles, one of which was Daryl Williams was that three-yard play that was going from, if you're looking at the screen, it's going from right to left or from near side to far side. That was a tackle. That was perfect. That was a perfect tackle, kept him in bounds. But on the touchdown, I've been going back and forth to people all day. If he follows Kelce and Mahomes gets the first down, they have no timeouts. They're going to have to spike the ball. And if they spike it, they're probably going to go for a field goal. That's fine. Let the game be tied and take your chances in overtime. And he just, I don't know what he was doing. I know that Gruden, he praises Abrams' aggressiveness, but this was the same guy in camp last summer that was laying people out in practice. There comes a point where it's either sit down or it's either learn. And the Raiders are 6-4. This is a game where I will not put this entire game on Jonathan Abrams' shoulders. I will not be that guy. But he, between the missed tackles, between the bad angles, there's that 15-yard penalty. Why are we doing this? And it just didn't seem like he's in control of his emotions. Emotions are great in football, but not at the expense of costing your team. And he's literally hurting the team more than he's helping. Do you think that someone in that locker room or someone on that defense will be able to sit and pull him aside, or who do you think that should be?
Honestly, I think Charles Woodson should get involved here. You hear a lot about Marcus Allen mentoring Josh Jacobs. I think Charles Woodson would be the perfect player to sit down and talk to Jonathan Abram and discuss, you know, how to be that playmaking safety when, you know, as Charles went from corner to safety and understood that role, and just be able to talk to him and talk to him about the history of the Raiders and what it means, Jack Tatum, you know, George Atkinson, all the great safeties that come through there. But I think Charles Woodson would be an ideal player to do that with. And like you mentioned on that last play, they're in cover four. His responsibility is the third number three receiver vertical. If he releases vertical, he's your guy. And he did. And he just ran right by him. He didn't even look at him. He saw him coming, and then he just peeked at Mahomes, and then he's off. He's freelancing and left his responsibility. I think, and a lot of people, and I've had some Twitter arguments as well, people are like, well, don't blame Gunther because he called the defensive player to execute. But he has to understand what Jonathan Abram, what type of player he is. You can't have him in that situation at that spot. You got to have him up close to the line of scrimmage where he can do more havoc. I'm not going to call him Jamal Adams, but he's that type of player. Jamal Adams is not a player you want in deep coverage. You want him up around the line of scrimmage, causing havoc, blitzing, being a pass rusher, you know, taking away underneath stuff, working more coverage in the flat or hook areas. You don't want him covering the deep half or the deep third. And Gunther hasn't really made that adjustment. In his defense, though, they don't really have any depth. You saw them rotating guys in. Isaiah Johnson got some snaps, and he looked pretty good. And you saw Jeff Heath get some, and Eric Harris get some. It's not like they have a ton of safeties back there that can play that role, and we can move Abram into more of like a roaming guy in the middle of the field. There was an opportunity where he did have him playing middle linebacker in a Tampa 2 look, so he was responsible for – he lined up close to the line of scrimmage and then dropped back in kind of a Tampa 2 in the middle of the field. He's more situated in those type of coverages than having him have deep half responsibilities because he's going to vacate it. It's just the type of player he is. And I think Gunther needs to understand that and not just say, okay, this is the way the defense is designed. This is what you're supposed to do. That's not Jonathan Abram.
Now, I know this might be a different situation because they're different schemes, but you look at somebody like a Mark Barron. You look at somebody like a Deion Buchanan. These were safeties that made the switch to linebacker. Do you think that this should be in Jonathan Abrams' cards as far as his future? Because it doesn't seem like you said, playing the deep coverage is his forte.
Well, we started to see that the last couple of weeks in the dime packages. When the Raiders went to their dime personnel with three safeties, Abram did play up close to the line of scrimmage and had a lot more underneath responsibilities. And as I mentioned, without having Joyner available to be able to play safety in those packages, they relied on Isaiah Johnson in the first half to kind of do it. And in the second half, they kind of had more Abram back there. So I think with Abram on the roster and to get him into the best position he needs to be, you're going to have more quality depth at safety, or maybe just move Joyner back there full time and play him next to Abram. But I think Isaiah Johnson could be a player that could do that. But, yeah, I think the Raiders need – I don't know if he can go full-time linebacker and hold up in the box, but definitely in nickel and dime packages, he needs to be a dime backer. I'm not going to throw him in the Taylor Mays kind of did that. He's a different player than Taylor Mays. But you brought up some good examples. David Fulcher back with the Bengals when I was growing up, I remember him. Big hitter, he kind of did that as well in the late 80s, early 90s with the Bengals. But that's ideally what his role is to get him into more of that nickel-dime backer role in passing situations.
Because when I look at it, like you said, those guys like that, even though he started, he was a college linebacker, became safety, like a Darren Woodson was, he rolled up and he played similar, but Abram, deep coverages, he looks lost. He looks lost, and he looks like he's not so much disinterested, but he doesn't play with the same comfort. Like, he plays better going downhill. Now, on that last play that the Chiefs scored, we mentioned the defensive ends crashing, but you had Arden Key at defensive tackle, and I just don't get it. Like, he's not strong enough to, even if it's just one play, you can't have him at defensive tackle. He's not gonna whip a guard ever.
No, he's not, and you've seen that. He's kind of been in that role different times this year. It's kind of the Cleve Farrell role where he's putting a smaller guy in there that's more agile, but he's trying to do it just to set up twists and stunts, and it hasn't hit home at all year. Maybe in 3 years. I think I tweeted out yesterday that Gunther just loves these twists and these stunts, and maybe Marinelli has something to do with it too, but I've noticed the Raiders have a hard time hitting on those. And a lot of times the guys end up running into each other. They don't have spatial awareness. They're not running them properly. And, I mean, if I'm an offensive tackle or a guard and I'm playing the Raiders, all they got to do is cover my inside shoulder because that's all they're going to do. You don't really see them trying to get anywhere else. Like, if I'm a right tackle and I see Nassib coming at me, okay, I'm just going to push him into the guard, and that's it. I don't have to pass block anymore. And, yeah, Arden Key, strength-wise, he has no chance to be able to be effective in that kind of role unless he can win with speed, and there's just not enough space in that condensed area to do that. The only thing you can have him do is try to loop around on a stunt. But offenses aren't stupid. The film's out there. They know that. And kind of back to your Abram point, you're starting to see these lapses in coverage get abused over and over recently in the last couple of weeks, and you know why that is? Because it's on film. Teams have seen it now for 7, 8, 9, 10 weeks, so they know, you know what, if the Raiders, who are a heavy zone team now, I know a lot of people think they're a press man team, they're not. Gunther is a cover 3, cover 6 defensive coordinator. They'll mix in some cover 2 and some man, but they're primarily a zone defense. When they see all these coverage, these blown coverages by Abram, they're just going to keep attacking him. And until the Raiders stop it, there's nothing we can really do unless Abram becomes better in his coverage and has more discipline.
It's funny, like when you watch Abram and you know, he will show those flashes, and the film is right. He's kind of like a young hitter in baseball where he comes up, he gets the call up. It's the second time through the league that you will see if he adjusts. Once you see film on him, it changes. Their approach changes, and it has changed. And I'm looking at the secondary, and I'm looking at the safeties, and do you think they have enough safety talent to guide them to the playoffs?
Should get to the playoffs this year? I think they do, because I think the offense is going to score enough. I mean, we're looking at a top 5 offense in the NFL. The defense is just going to have to hold teams under 30. But I think they have enough to get there. Do they have enough to beat those teams on the road, the Steelers, the Chiefs, in January? I don't know yet. I'm not willing to say that. I think, like we've talked about on this podcast, I think Eric Harris is a rotational third, fourth safety. He's a special teams guy. Jeff Heath is good enough to get by with. I don't think he's a long-term answer. And then the other guys we're talking about are Isaiah Johnson making the switch, who's a young DB who hasn't played a lot of safety, or relying on Joyner, who you need to be your nickel back at this point because Nevin Lawson didn't hold up in there. And Amik Robertson, he was one of my favorite draft picks. He played 2 plays, and he basically got burned by Tyreek Hill on a quick out and almost stumbled over himself. And for such a big hitter he was on his college tape, he just looks lost out there right now, and they can't afford to give him a lot of snaps to move Joyner out of the slot. The Raiders secondary is young, and that was one of my other concerns, is with all the zones that we're running and all the zone defenses that Gunther's acquiring out of these guys, and understanding all the different formations, the route combinations. I think you just got to let these guys play man. Just say, hey, Mullen, line up. You got this guy. Arnett, you got that guy. Joyner, you got this guy. Play coverage. Play man too, with double safeties over the top, and just allow these athletes to run around. I don't think that with all the youth they have in the secondary, they can play all these different zone concepts against all these different teams and formations that Gunther wants to. And I think at some point they just need to start playing more man.
I agree. Now, if we fast forward to Sunday, they make the trip to Atlanta and they face the Falcons. Now, the Falcons, you know, they were embarrassed by the Saints and Taysom Hill, and Carr is infinitely a much better passer than Hill. I want to look at the Falcons' offense. It's pretty much – they actually have excellent receivers with Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, and there's a guy in the slot, Olamide Zaccheaus out of Virginia. I saw him in Virginia. He's like a versatile slot guy. They have, and if you add in Hayden Hurst and players like that, there is talent available there. And
Todd Gurley.
Todd Gurley in the backfield, you know, 9 touchdowns, being able to, you know, he looks like the knee is less creaky this year. But do you think that this is a game where the Raiders should be able to put them to bed early, or do you think because of the Atlanta offensive firepower that this might be a bit of a contest?
I think we're looking at a shootout again. Unfortunately, Raider fans will see the 3-7 record and expect another Broncos game 37-12. I don't see that. Matt Ryan's a veteran quarterback. He's got a tight end that can move. I mean, Julio Jones is an absolute monster on the outside. Calvin Ridley is playing at near Pro Bowl level. They have a quick guy in the slot. They can run the football. Jake Matthews is a good left tackle. They have an all-pro center. I mean, this is an offense that can put up points. I know last week they didn't do much against New Orleans, but New Orleans' defense last week played lights out, and that's a defense that has a lot more talent on it than Las Vegas does. And this is going to be a great game to look at Trayvon Mullen if they give him the opportunity to cover Jones quite a bit. Arnett, I think he had a good game last week. He's played pretty well since coming back from the injury, but he still has one hand basically, and he's going to have to cover Julio Jones quite a bit, or Calvin Ridley, who's a quick, shiftier guy. And with the way the Raiders' safeties have been playing, they're not going to get a lot of help over the top, and it's going to be tough. I mean, every one of those guys is a matchup problem. Oh, and they can run the ball. And the Raiders' interior defensive line has not been good. Their pass rush has not been good. The good news is Matt Ryan's not going anywhere, so you can actually pin yours back and go for a spot. You're not going to have to worry about him scrambling around. He's not Josh Allen. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Lamar Jackson. He's not one of those guys. But if you give him time and you don't put pressure on him, he's going to pick apart the defense.
Now, just from a football standpoint, do you think that loss to the Patriots in Super Bowl still weighs over Matt Ryan, or do you think that you believe him when he said that, you know, he's long forgotten about it?
I think he's always going to think about it, because at this point in his career, it doesn't look like he's going to be on a team that's going to allow him to get back to the Super Bowl and try to redeem himself. He might be one and done in his Super Bowls and always say what if for the rest of his life. That would only be natural. So I don't think he's ever going to forget about it. It's going to haunt him for the rest of his career, and then after that as well.
I agree. Now, before we get out, can you tell people where they can interact with you and see your content, which ranks among the best in the nation?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. Twitter handle is RHOLM22, so it's at RHOLM22. And that's where I put all the content up. I have about half the first half of the game is up already from the Chase. I'll probably have the second half up by early morning. And then every week, check it out on Monday afternoon or Tuesday morning to get some breakdowns of some of the plays from the game the prior week.
He is a must-follow. He is one of the best out there. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. This has been another episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other. Hope for much better defense in Atlanta.